How was your weekend?
It's all right, you know. It's nothing earth-shattering.
He was an ordinary guy.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Looking for an extraordinary love.
I'm Peter Lev.
Rachel.
I brought this girl up to my place the other night.
It started with a kiss.
Really hot.
A very special kiss.
You wanted her very badly.
Yeah.
A kiss that could drive you mad.
I hate interrupted love affairs, don't you?
Yep.
It's affecting his work.
There you are!
It's a horrible, horrible job. And you have to do it.
It's ruining his appetite.
My next appointment with you is Tuesday afternoon.
I'd like to make it sooner.
It's spoiling his sleep.
Sooner.
And don't think people haven't noticed.
Am I getting through to you, Alva?
He is so eccentric.
My.
For Peter Lowe.
Oh, sooner.
That's just love.
Love?
Love.
In the big city.
Yeah! Don't laugh.
I'm a professional. I don't laugh.
I'm a vampire!
Nicolas Cage.
The tortures of the damned!
Maria Conchita Alonso.
Shoot it. Do it or I'll fire you. Do you understand?
Not the floor, Alva.
And Jennifer Beals.
You're so pathetic.
Vampire's Kiss.
Strange stuff. I'll never do that again. Jeez.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic, Mike DiCriscio. How are you doing today, Mike?
Good. I'm excited. I think today is going to be a very interesting episode.
Yeah.
We have, I think, one of the most infamous Cage movies of all time.
Yes, yeah. Now, when we set out to begin this podcast, I think we did so for a couple different reasons. You know, we wanted to study the evolution of an actor we both admired for many years. We'd make a grander statement about our relationship to actors on film. Why not? But
yeah, sure. Let's pretend we had that idea.
But I think the main reason for picking Nicolas Cage above all actors, at least for me, was that it would give me a chance to discuss Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah, that was definitely in the back of my mind when we picked Nicolas Cage.
When you pick Nicolas Cage, like, you think of, like, there are just certain roles that you think of when you think of Nicolas Cage, right? You think of, like, just his big roles. Like, for me, you think of, like, Raising Arizona, you think of Adaptation. I would think of Kick-Ass, I would think of The Wicker Man. But among those roles, Vampire's Kiss is, like, you know, this is peak Cage. This is, like...
And it's interesting because it kind of predates the insanity of Cage.
Yeah, it's like we've been doing this podcast for a while now. This is episode 12, and in that time, we've seen glimpses of Cage, you know, kind of going a little nuts in some of his movies, but we haven't really seen full blown insanity Cage that he's known for. Like, that's the kind of thing that, like, you know, that's when people think of Nicolas Cage, like, his fans, that's what they love about him, is, like, crazy, over the top performances that it gives. And this is the movie, man.
Oh yeah,
this is the one where it blows the door wide open.
Yep, there's no going back.
Yeah. Now, Vampire's Kiss stars Cage as Peter Lu. An IMDb plot synopsis reads: After an encounter with a neck biter, a publishing executive thinks that he's turning into a vampire. That's the end of the plot synopsis from IMDb.
Oh, as in depth as always.
Yeah, but it is not wrong. Because that's true. Basically the entire movie. Vampire's Kiss is one of those movies that has really become, like, the stuff of legend, you know?
Yeah.
When people think of Nicolas Cage, I mean, yeah, his over-the-top nature that he brings to a lot of performances, this is the movie that started it all for me. And I think for a lot of people, this is the holy grail of Nicolas Cage performances.
Of crazy Cage.
Yeah, this is a comic tour de force role that escalates and escalates until you become convinced that Cage is truly an insane person in real life. And, I mean, the jury's still out on that one. We don't know.
Yeah, we haven't decided yet.
Vampire's Kiss was directed by Robert Bierman and written by Joseph Minion. Bierman went on to mostly work in television going forward on shows like Waking the Dead and Holby City. though he was at one point attached to direct the 1986 remake of The Fly, which was instead made under David Cronenberg.
Well, that worked out.
Joseph Mengele is also known for writing the screenplay to Martin Scorsese's 1985 film After Hours. Now, Vampire's Kiss was not a hit upon release. This movie was made on a budget of $2 million, and the film made about $725,000.
Wow.
So even on that very, very small budget of $2 million, it failed to make half of that. You know?
Tragic, really. Yeah.
So you know, people didn't much care for the movie at the time, didn't really get a huge critical response. But over time, the film's reputation grew.
Yeah.
And I believe this is the movie that defines Nicolas Cage for a lot of people. The entire movie hangs on this kind of lunatic performance that Cage is giving.
Yeah, definitely the whole... I don't know if I want to say selling point.
I would absolutely say selling point.
Okay.
I think this would be an entirely different movie if you had anybody else in the lead role.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
So the film stars Nicolas Cage as Peter Lowe, Maria Conchita Alonso as Alva, Jennifer Beals, known for her role from Flashdance, Elizabeth Ashley, Casey Lemons, Bob Lujan, Jessica Lundy, and Johnny Walker, and features small cameo appearances that I couldn't find any of them. I think I'll buy so fast. But John Michael Higgins, Mark Coppola, Amy Stiller, who is Ben Stiller's sister, and David Hyde Pierce is in this movie.
What?
Yeah.
Well, granted, there are so many scenes of just a packed New York City bar that, like...
Yeah, I'm
sure they're there.
Yeah, the... David Hyde Pierce is credited as Theater Guy. That's his character's name.
Sure.
My guess, and Amy Stiller is credited as Theater Girl, my guess is that those two are the mimes that are outside of Cage's apartment.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
That's the best I got with that.
Yeah, probably. yeah, that was a really odd choice.
Yeah, and I mean, this movie is filled with very odd choices.
Yes.
which we'll get to in a minute. So, but I guess, Mike... what are your overall thoughts on Vampire's Kiss?
Well, it was an interesting experience. I had never seen this before, so I was pretty excited to just drink it all in.
Right. Now, have you seen, like, I mean, were you familiar with it at least a little bit? Like, have you seen clips of the movie at all? Or
yeah, I had seen, I'm sure, the, what is it, that, like, half-hour-long YouTube video of Greatest Cage Freakouts or whatever. And it includes the, I'm a vampire, and the him yelling the alphabet.
Right, those are two very famous Cage scenes.
Yeah, so I had seen stuff, and I was sort of familiar with what the movie was. Now, unfortunately, I've come down with some kind of sickness, so I have a fever as we're recording this, and as I was watching the film, and I can't really decide if it made it better or worse.
So you were going through a very similar trauma.
Yes.
As Cage was in the movie.
That's what I was thinking. There was moments where I was like, I can't tell if this is my fever dream or the movie. And I wasn't quite sure. But there was a lot of stuff like just him, I don't know, sure, why not destroy your apartment? And moments like that. But
like while he was destroying his apartment in the movie, you were doing the same in,
yes,
in
I
real
was,
life.
I was destroying my apartment, yes. Everyone knows that's how fevers work. but it started towards the end and, you know, middle sort of, I was kind of just like, I want to just curl up and not have to pay attention to this. I kind of wanted it to end. So maybe I'll go back and revisit it and have a different opinion of it. But, I get the feeling probably not.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it is it's an experience.
Yeah.
Know? And
it's an hour and 45 minutes that I could have, been spent sleeping.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, this is my second time watching Vampire's Kiss. I saw the movie about 5 years ago. And my experience with watching it 5 years ago was that I had heard about it a lot. You know, I was very familiar with certain scenes just through YouTube and stuff like that. And, you know, but I was never able to get a hold of it, you know?
Right.
Because it's very difficult to find. If you go to Netflix, you can't – it's not in their library of movies that you can get sent to your house. It's
not even on DVD for them?
No. And the movie is – the movie was released on DVD in 2002, and Scream Factory released a Blu-ray just last year. But even so, like it's a difficult movie to find. Like I don't think many copies were made,
right,
of those things. And so, you know, it's difficult to find elsewhere. When I saw it 5 years ago, The movie appeared on Netflix Instant for 2 days. It was there for 2 days. And the day it premiered, I saw that it was up and immediately texted my friend to come over so we can watch it.
Right.
Because we had been talking about the movie, like, oh man, wouldn't it be crazy to finally see Vampire's Kiss? And it was like this godsend that just appeared on Netflix Instant. And we were like, we have to watch this right now. And then it was a good thing we did because the movie disappeared from Netflix the next day.
That's crazy. Yeah. That had to be a joke or an accident. Was it April Fool's Day? Like, what happened?
I think it was in October. It was probably like around Halloween.
What?
It was.
That's crazy.
Somebody at Netflix hit the wrong button or something.
Yeah.
So I had seen Vampire's Kiss 5 years ago and wasn't really sure what to make of it back then. And now watching it again, I really don't know what to make of it now.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think it's a bad movie. I actually think it's really, like, oddly compelling.
Oh, yeah. It walks this fine line between...
I think it transcends our mortal understanding of what is good or bad, you know?
Wow.
It is...
The movie in and of itself is like a vampire.
Boom. Bingo. Boom.
Got it. Pretend that made sense, because I have a fever.
You know, this is a movie that hinges entirely on Cage's performance. Like, I feel like without Cage, this doesn't work at all. It's like this weird, like, black comedy movie, right? Like, it's definitely playing it for laughs, I think.
Is it, though? I can't tell. That was my issue.
Really?
I mean, maybe just because of my situation, but I was like, is it trying to be funny? There were some moments where it's giving you horror movie cues, like with the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which I know it's aware of, like it's, you know, a quote-unquote vampire movie. But I couldn't tell if it's, like, trying to make me scared, like, is it just, like, how silly and crazy this is?
My reading of the movie is that it's a black comedy. There's definitely comedic elements to the movie. But there are so many things that are played very seriously, and the subject matter of which is very serious, that it's almost impossible to find a laugh in. But I think that is part of the joke.
Okay.
In, like, a weird way. Like, there's a...
The joke is there is no joke?
In a weird way, yeah. It's this odd, like, anti-comedy thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, the relationship between Cage and Alva is a very antagonistic relationship. And I think for much of the movie... Like, it plays it off as a very funny relationship. Like, you know, just the way Cage... Like, because that's Cage... You get to watch Cage freaking out and, like, doing his, like, over-the-top thing.
Right.
But it starts off as, like, this weirdly funny thing where Cage will just, like, yell at Alva the entire time, do this over-the-top stuff. Like, he'll just, like, walk into the office, jump up onto a desk and shout, "There you are!" You know?
Yeah.
But as the movie goes on, as it gets closer to the end, like, Cage rapes Alva.
Yeah. Yeah, she gets very dark.
Yeah, it gets very dark. And it builds to a dramatic conclusion where Alva's brother ends up killing Cage by staking him. But even after he rapes her, there's, like, oddball, like, lines that are played for comedy about the rape.
It's very odd. Like, when... Right after that happens, and he takes her gun that's loaded with blanks, and he, like, puts it in his mouth and, like, tries to shoot himself. And I think he's literally yelling, "Boo-hoo." Like, I can't tell if he's just, like, I don't know. It's weird.
Right. And, I mean, I'm talking about, like, the scene at the end where he's hallucinating a meeting with his therapist. And he meets, and he meets Sharon, and he is doing, like, he's like, "Oh, by the way, I mean... I did rape somebody the other day. I hope that's not a problem."
Yep.
You know, that's played for a laugh. And, like, it's funny in the moment, but it's also, like, this very, like, dark.
Bizarre. Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, I don't understand.
The movie is very weird, and it's very oddball, and I'm not sure what to make of it. Like, I've seen it twice now, and I think I like it, is what I can say. I feel oddly compelled while I'm watching it. You know, in addition to Cage's performance, I mean, you have Jennifer Beals from Flashdance playing Rachel, who was the quote-unquote vampire that beat Cage.
Right.
Who is also doing, like, a slightly over-the-top thing going on during his hallucinations.
Yeah.
And that has like an odd scene. When the bat attacks them early on in the movie, she just like runs out of his apartment completely naked and just sitting there like on the front, like talking to a little kid.
Right. Is that the same person?
Yeah, that was Rachel, I'm pretty sure. Was it not?
Oh, I thought that was a different girl.
Oh, it might have been. It might have been Jackie.
Maybe. I don't remember. I don't know. I don't know what their characters' names were, but I thought that girl, then he leaves her hanging in the art gallery
and then
finds the vampire chick.
Never mind. All right. I rescind that.
But that's a weird-ass scene also.
That is a weird-ass scene. I also like the POV camera shot of the bat.
Yeah,
as it's attacking Cage.
Yep.
I think that was pretty good.
I want to point out that bat is one step away from being on a fishing line.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Like
I'm pretty sure it is, but you can't quite see it.
Yeah.
But you've been to point out it had a $2 million budget, so it was pretty great.
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, so we've talked about some of the odd things about this movie, but really this movie is Nicolas Cage. You know, this is pure unfiltered Cage performance. And I mean, we've seen Cage go a little nuts before. I remember we were talking about like Valley Girl, where he has the scene where he gets drunk and like he does like some oddball stuff, or like
that's my first note is the glorious return of drunk Nicolas Cage. The movie opens with him drunk.
yep, there's that. And I remember I mean, Raising Arizona, he's playing a very over-the-top character as well.
Yeah.
Moonstruck, he's doing a very over-the-top performance as well. But, I mean, this is where he's truly insane. You know?
Unhinged.
Like, unhinged. Like, Nicolas Uncaged.
Wow. Nice.
And, yeah, I mean, like, this is the movie that has spawned so many different internet memes and, like, quotes, and you know, people just refer back to this movie over and over again. The famous image of Nicolas Cage in this movie is the one where he's got his like eyebrows raised way up and his
his eyes bulging.
Eyes bulging, and it's actually my favorite scene in the movie, which I'll play a clip of now.
So, why do you have your coat on?
Well, I'm leaving, it's 5 o'clock.
But, you know, Alva, you still haven't found that contract yet, have you?
I don't know. There are 15. There's legal files. It's all I do all day. I mean, I...
But you haven't found it yet, Alva. Now, don't you think it would be a good idea to stay late? Maybe work a little overtime?
My eyes are killing me.
Aw.
Well, I was also thinking today that maybe you could put somebody else on the job for a while. Or another secretary to help me out. I mean, you know, to make the job easier.
Alva, there is no one else in this entire office that I could possibly ask to share such a horrible job. You're the lowest on the totem pole here, Alva. The lowest. Do you realize that? Every other secretary who's been here has been here longer than you, Alva. Everyone. And even if there was someone here who was here just one day longer than you, I still wouldn't ask that person to partake in such a miserable job as long as you were around. That's right, Alva. It's a horrible, horrible job, sifting through old contract after old contract. I couldn't think of a more horrible job if I wanted to. And you have to do it. You have to, or I'll fire you. Do you understand?
You know, it's a scene where, you know, he's berating Alva yet again.
Yeah.
And you know, the entire movie, he's just making Alva go after this file that is nowhere to be found. And this perfect scene where Cage is just like, I wouldn't have anybody in this room do this horrible task but you, Alva.
Yeah, that was very...
You're the lowest on the totem pole, Alva.
That was a very scary moment for Alva, and like Alva's the real MVP of this film. Let's be honest. that's kind of where you stop thinking that Cage maybe is just like he's a weirdo and is like going crazy, but he's like there. He's full blown. That's it. Like he doesn't come back from that.
Yeah, that's such an intense performance and like that line reading, like the way he just like,
yeah,
like just over the top going like crazy bulging eyes. Like it's scary. Like it's,
yeah,
like it's funny because he's like clearly like outside the realm of sanity.
Right.
And it's fun to watch. Like it's a fun performance to watch, but it's actually like kind of intense and like intimidating. Yeah. And you like the way, and you can tell as the movie's going on, like he begins mistreating Alva pretty early on in the movie.
Right. He's just an asshole boss in the beginning.
Yeah. But as it's going on, you can tell he's trying to goad Alva into killing him.
Yeah.
Right. That's like his goal.
Once he finds out she has a gun. Yeah.
Yeah. And like at the end of that scene, like she leaves the office and he's like, don't you want to use your gun, Alva?
Can we talk about what fucking accent he uses?
I was about to say, like, yeah. I feel like we've said that in several of our several of these reviews.
Is this just the way he talks and we're assholes? Or?
Well, it can't be because he's doing a different weird voice in so many different movies.
Okay, all right. I don't feel bad then.
You know, and like, and it and the voice in this movie kind of like changes throughout, like depending on his voice level that he's talking. You know, sometimes he'll be shouting, sometimes he'll be doing like this weird, like lilting British accent. Almost.
Yeah, and like his vowels are weird. I don't get it. It doesn't just give away. You're like, what? Like, I don't understand. And I did notice at the end, at least, I don't remember how many other hallucinations we see, or at least extended ones. At the end, when he's hallucinating, talking with his therapist, he's talking normally in that hallucination.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And that kind of makes, like, if you're thinking of it, like, that's how he's, like, seeing the best version of himself, sort of.
Right.
I also love that in that hallucination, he's still carrying the stake under his arm.
Yeah, he's still got the plank of wood. Oh, great.
Which is pretty great. But, yeah, like, his voice and his pronunciation of words is just very odd in this movie. Like, early on when he's, like, talking to his therapist about the encounter with the bat, he says something along the lines of, I was in Mortal Kombat with a fucking bat. Like, what?
Yeah. That's a really good one, actually. Good job, Mike.
My favorite line reading of this movie is early on when he's yelling at Alva. Like the him yelling at Alva for a lot of the movie is like a highlight for me.
Pretty great.
When he's like faces down, points to the camera, and is like, am I getting through to you?
Yeah.
Alva.
Yes. Yeah. That I feel kind of, I don't know, is the precursor for the rest of his career. It's just everything is acts of bold line reading choices. Like,
yeah, like this is like a movie where he was like, all right, I'm just going to, it just feels like this is a movie where he's going to be like he's been making movies for a little while at this point.
Right.
And he's been playing, you know, relatively similar characters for the most part. You know, a lot of times he was playing like, high schoolers or characters who had or gonna go off to war, or
right.
That was actually in like Three Things, like Best of Times, Racing with the Moon, and Birdie, right? Those were like,
right.
You know, he was playing like similar characters, and then in the last couple of movies that we've discussed, like Grazing Arizona and Moonstruck, you got to see him stretch a little bit in the types of characters he was playing, and I feel like this is like his full blown experimentation, like give no fucks,
yeah,
performance. Like this is all out, pure unfiltered Cage.
Yep. And I feel like I've heard interviews or read stuff where he says that, like, he just lets it all happen. He doesn't make choices. They just, whatever comes to him goes.
Right.
And I feel like this was his first foray into that technique.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this is, like, really, like, the defining moment for the rest of Cage's career, almost.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Let's see how many times you could say that in different ways.
Are you already feeling like we're just repeating ourselves?
I feel like we are.
Let's talk about, like, do you have any other favorite scenes in the movie, Mike? Anything else that, like, really sticks out to you?
Well, there's the moment where after he, you know, he chases Alva into the woman's room and, like, that whole insanity happens. And then as she's leaving, he calls her into his office and he's, like, eating pistachios and he's, like, trying to apologize. And his excuse for freaking out is at work. Is that he's on mescaline.
Right.
What?
Yep. Yeah, and that leads into like the crazy eyes bulging scene.
Right.
And yeah, it's just...
I love that that's the most reasonable. And Alva's totally cool with it. She's like, yeah, I tried mescaline once too. It was weird. Yeah. It's a bonding moment for them.
Yes. And I love the way, the movie like ramps up Cage's vampire tendencies over the course of the hour and 45 minutes. Like,
yeah,
early on, he just starts wearing sunglasses everywhere.
Right.
I remember he's in a meeting at one point and just like casually closes the blinds.
Right. just like that stuff was kind of subtle. Like the blind shutting, like that kind of thing was okay. Right. But and then there's the board meeting after him chasing Alva and they're like making fun of her for wanting a raise.
Right. Yeah.
Because, like what? There's a lot of stuff that I just didn't get.
Yeah.
It's probably because I'm sick, but. I get that it was supposed to make us not like Cage. Cage is not the like hero or
absolutely not. Yeah,
no, protagonist at all in
from,
this film.
From like frame one, yeah, he's
yeah portrayed
as like this kind of asshole character,
right?
Like you know, high powered like
literary agent because that's a thing.
Literary agents. the way he shouts the word literature early on in the movie,
yes,
was pretty amazing. yeah, he's like this high-powered guy who's like going home with like different women every night.
Right.
He's like supposed to be like this really charming kind of asshole character. And then he gets bitten by this woman, Rachel, after this bat attack. Like the bat attack happens, and then like the next night he's with Rachel, and she supposedly bites him.
Right.
You know, and that's one of those things where like, did that actually happen? Did it not? Like,
I don't know.
A lot of this movie is like that. There's like,
yeah.
Things that like could have happened, could have didn't. Basically, everything that had to do with vampires did not actually happen.
Didn't happen. Yeah, yeah. I did like I mentioned there's a lot of like horror cues and stuff. There's the cheap bat on a fishing line. You know, they show you know Nosferatu for about 10 seconds or something like that. Kind of homages to like the B horror movie, you know, monster movies. And the only one that I actually liked and wasn't just like, psh, come on, like, stop, was when after he's accepted his fate as a vampire and he's bought the plastic vampire teeth. and he starts sleeping under the couch as a coffin.
Yeah.
And when he lifts the couch up, it makes the creaking noise like all the vampire coffins. I thought that was actually kind of clever and a nice touch.
Yeah.
but that scene was great when he buys the vampire teeth.
And it's just running down the street with, like, vampire teeth, like, in his mouth.
Yeah, that, like, you get trick-or-treating.
Yeah. That was pretty great. And, like, his whole spiral in the last half hour of the movie is just really fascinating to watch. Like, when he's outside the church and he hears the church bells, and he's, like, covering his ears and going, "The torches of the damned!"
I feel like that's a great example of the whole movie. Whole movie really is like just that kind of stuff.
The entire encapsulation of the movie is pretty much that. That scene where he has the fake vampire teeth, goes into a club, finds a girl and bites her neck and kills her.
Yeah. For like a second, I was like, oh shit, is this real? Like what? Like, is he actually a vampire? Cause she like kind of has the same facial expressions that he did when he was getting bit, where it goes from like pain to ecstasy for a second. Yeah. But no, turns out he just killed her.
He just killed, like, bit into her jugular, and yeah.
That was pretty odd.
Pretty intense. And then he finds Rachel in the club and, like, confronts her.
Yeah. that scene reminded me of as they're carrying Nicolas Cage out of the club, and he's just screaming, "She's a goddamn vampire, check her teeth." Which went on for a really long time. I don't know why that's like, why that moment needed to be, like, a minute and a half.
Yeah.
All I could think of was Soylent Green as people. Just carrying him out, and he's just yelling crazy shit. So that was weird. But it also had the very end of it was like the best encapsulation of New York to me was Nicolas Cage walking down the street covered in blood, carrying a plank of wood, talking to himself, and nobody flinches. No one even looks at him. They all just walk right past
him.
No
one cares.
It was great. They did a good job there.
Whether that was intentional or not.
I doubt it, but I liked it.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, just there's so many scenes in this movie that I just really love. We briefly mentioned the ABC scene.
Miss Filed.
Yes, Miss Filed. Sometimes somebody puts a document in the wrong file and then it's misfiled. It makes it much harder to find.
Who?
What do you mean? Who?
I don't know who exactly.
You don't?
No, I don't. Whoever filed it in the first place. But for God's sakes, Peter, I am not telling you one single thing you don't already know.
How could somebody misfile something? What could be easier? It's all alphabetical. You just put it in the right file, according to alphabetical order. You know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P,
Peter.
Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z! Huh? That's all you have to do!
Very good. You know your alphabet.
I never misfiled anything! Not once, not one time!
Right. But that's a tour de force of Cage. That's a guy. Like, that is a scene where Nicolas Cage found a different inflection for every letter of the alphabet.
That's a good point.
And just decided to go with the entire thing. Like,
yep, did the whole thing, and it seems like he loses control of his arms.
Yeah.
They change positions every letter.
Different wild gesture every time, too.
Yeah.
It's really amazing, actually.
It's pretty crazy.
And the way it's like kind of the button to that scene where it's just like, you know, he says the entire alphabet, and like, the therapist is like, very good. You know your alphabet.
Yeah.
And he goes, I've never misfiled anything. And he like crosses his arms and pouts like a child.
Yep. It's pretty great. And that's basically the whole movie.
Yeah. Like it's a movie that's less of like a coherent narrative and more like a series of escalating Nicolas Cage freakouts.
Right.
Which is really like, and it kind of makes it really fascinating to watch because it mirrors this guy's like it works for this character, I think, you know, mm-hmm. It's like increasingly deranged character in this increasingly deranged performance of Nicolas Cage. Like,
right. Yeah. That was very apt of you, Mike. about the conclusion of the film when he gets staked?
Emilio Alva's brother does stake Nicolas Cage through the stomach, I believe, not the heart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it works because he's not really a vampire.
That's a good point.
I think that's really, I actually like that conclusion a lot. I think it's a very, like, poetic ending. You know, if you think of this as, like, a vampire film,
right,
which it sort of is.
Like, it's, it thinks it is.
Well, I think
people in the movie think it is.
Like, you know, how do you kill a vampire? You stake it. You stake a vampire. And so I feel like it's actually, it feels like the only way Cage could have, this movie could have ended, because Cage had to die. Like, he was an irredeemable protagonist at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel like, you know, the way you would end a vampire movie is you stake the vampire. And so I feel like, you know, it makes sense that that would happen to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Yes. It felt not rushed or any, I don't know, it just didn't feel good.
you didn't like it?
I mean, I understand it. I like that he was staked and stuff, but like, I don't know. Emilio flips the couch over and then Nicolas Cage just puts the stake up for him and then he just like hits it. And then
right. Well, Cage wanted to die at this
Cage
point.
Cage did want to die.
Like, he wanted to die very early on in the movie once he found out he was a vampire. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, I just remember the scene when he's in the bathroom looking at himself in the mirror, and he's shouting, "Where am I?"
And his reflection's right there.
Yeah. And then someone from the stall's like, "Shut up!" yells at him.
Yes, yeah. I'm also a big fan of the way, this is like close to the scene where he rapes Alva, which I feel like is a terrible thing to say, but like, it is what happens, but like the way his performance does it, like you don't even realize it's going to happen. Like you're having so much fun with his performance and like the intensity and like the weirdness of it,
right.
That when that starts happening and it's like a very heavy kind of moment, like that stuff is like very, like it's a very odd disconnect from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, from the rest of the movie, that feels very out of place.
Yeah, but I'm saying I'm a big fan of the way he's bobbing his head like back and forth, going too late, too late.
Yeah, and after all that shit, Alva finds the contract.
Yeah,
and then he rapes her.
Yeah, I think the best part of this is that she didn't need to find the contract at all, because if you remember early in the movie, he like calls her into his office and says like I'm gonna have you watch this little song and dance I have to do with this guy as I try to explain to him that I don't have the contract, and then he calls him And the guy was like, oh, yeah, don't worry about the contract.
When you find it, you find it.
Yeah. And, like, he hangs up and is like, well, you can tell I didn't have to do a song and dance at all because he was furious.
Couldn't get a voice. Couldn't get a word. Oh, man. This movie's bizarre.
Yeah. Aren't you glad that you've seen it now? Like, I feel like...
I guess.
It's such a weird, like, experience, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I could say I've done it.
Yeah. Now you can say you've seen Vampire's Kiss.
Right.
So when people ask you at parties, hey, have you seen Vampire's Kiss?
As they often do. I can finally say yes.
Yeah, all right.
I go to the monthly Cage meeting.
Right, which is this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, all right, do you have any other final thoughts about Vampire's Kiss, Mike, or should we wrap it up?
No, I think I've said all I can.
Okay. Where can we find you online this week, Mike?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you enjoy Dungeons & Dragons, my group and I stream our games at twitch.tv/geonerd79.
All right. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. You can find me on Letterboxd under Mike Smith Film. And you can find my other podcast at filmbook.com, where I podcast about, I'm currently podcasting about Agent Carter, as well as Gotham and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you can find our other podcast at filmbook.com, Filmbookcast as well. Thank you so much for listening to Complete Works, guys. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCrescio. If you're listening to this video via podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@film-book.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. Because so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks, where we will be discussing Nicolas Cage's small cameo role in the 1989 comedy Never on Tuesday.
Great.
I feel like you're very excited about this
one. Oh, what gave it away?
Yeah. Check out this week's film bookcast, where Mike and I will be reviewing Jane Got a Gun. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.